Okay, Rabotai, good morning. I'd like to begin by survey says, here is the scenario. Your son, your daughter, comes home from school one day and says, they'd like to go to this and this young man or young woman for Shabbat. And you know that this particular young man or young woman is not the most positive influence around. And you say, I'm sorry, Yankala, I'm sorry, Ruchala, I don't want you to go. I don't want you to go. I'm telling you, I don't want you to go. How many people here think that your son and daughter is halachically obligated to listen to you under those circumstances? Nobody. And that son or daughter can go? Okay. See, this is a difficult question to get wrong, because as the situation is in the overwhelming majority of halachic issues, it's a machlokes. And what we're going to see today is the key line which will center upon the issue concerning obedience of a child to a parent. How far does a parent have, what latitude does a parent have to make demands upon a child? And we can tackle a variety of issues. I'm going to give you three extreme cases of Rav Moshe Feinstein, the Maharik, and Tumas Hadeshen, who all will come to one conclusion. It happens to be the majority conclusion. And then the other opinion will be the Rav's opinion, which is based on Ramban in Maseches Yevamos, which takes a totally different approach. And the person who made the announcement on Shabbos said, this particular lecture is not for children, only for parents. Parents will be happy to hear the first half. Children will be delighted to hear the second half of the presentation. Yes?
Can you just define what child age-wise means?
We'll get to that a little later. I don't expect this to be a discussion about a six-year-old. I'm talking about
13.
Exactly. Somebody who's already in his or her formative years, has a brain unto him or herself, voices their opinion quite forcefully at times, sometimes with a tad of degree of chutzpah, but they're able to communicate and state their preferences quite clearly. So we're going to see two or three situations based on a definition of how we interpret the primary text in Maseches Kiddushin, defining the mitzvah of Yira, not Kibud. Let's take a look at the source sheets that we have in front of you. The fifth commandment, everybody knows, Kabedet Avicha Ve'etimecha, L'ma'an Ya'arichun Yamecha Alvo Adamar, Asher Hashem Elokech Notein Lach. Kabedet Avicha Ve'etimecha. As is the case with virtually every single mitzvah in the Torah, it is impossible to define it appropriately without Torah Shiva Alpeh. There are no latitudes, there are no definitions, no restrictions, no guidelines offered in the Chumash. None whatsoever. That happens to be true with 99% of the mitzvot of the Torah. The Torah tells you to dwell in a sukkah. What in the world is a sukkah? Torah tells you to eat matzah. Torah doesn't tell you what matzah is. Could be a tam-tam cracker. You need Torah Shiva Alpeh to define every mitzvah of the Torah, and kibud and yirah are no different than any other mitzvah of the Torah. So here you have the basis of the mitzvah of kibud. On the second sheet, on the back of this page, you have the mitzvah of yirah. The mitzvah of yirah is found in Vayikra chapter 19, very, very famous pasuk. Ish imo ve'aviv tira'u, an individual shall fear or establish a sense of awe or reverence for mother and father. Ve'et shabtotai kishmoru, ani Hashem Elokecha. Again, no definition, no inkling in the Torah as to what it means to fear somebody. What does it mean to fear? Literally, it's translated as fear, even though we don't really mean that a child has to tremble in the presence of their parents. So let's go immediately to the Gemara in Kiddushin, which offers two lines, as an attempt to define this, and then we'll see how far this definition ought to be expanded. The Gemara in Kiddushin is on that Lamed Aleph Amud Bet in Maseches Kiddushin. There is a Mishnah in Kiddushin on Chav Tet Amud Aleph that describes parental obligations vis-a-vis a child, that a parent is obligated to, for in the case of a boy, circumcise the child, podehem in the case of a bechor, teach him Torah, teach him a trade, and so on and so forth. So since there is a discussion concerning parental obligations, the Mishnah, the Gemara now takes an opportunity to discuss children's obligations via parent as well. That's how it gets crept in to Maseches Kiddushin. The source sheets are right here. So the Gemara says, Tanu Rabbanan, Eizehu Morah ve'Eizehu Kibud. What might be the definition of Yirah, of Morah, and what might be the definition of Kibud? Answers the Gemara. Morah lo omeid b'mekomo v'lo yoshev b'mekomo. If pap or mom have a specific place where they stand, either in the Beit Knesset, or as other Rishonim say, at a club, you go to the bar, and your father has a particular place where he stands at the bar, where he has a makam kavua at the bar. Well, you, son or daughter, are not permitted to occupy that place. We don't have that too frequently, lo omeid b'mekomo. Lo yoshev b'mekomo is obviously a very practical definition, that a child is not permitted to occupy the place at the table where mother and father sit. Lo yoshev b'mekomo. V'lo soter et divarav. This line is the key line upon which we'll be spending the lion's share of our time. V'lo soter et divarav. Translate it loosely. Ladies and ladies, anybody. What? Do not contradict them. So taken broadly, this is the greatest statement that a parent wants to hear. Do not contradict me. Do not contradict. Lo soterit vara. Velo machri'o. And you do not offer a clinching argument on his behalf. The context of phrases 3 and 4. Lo soteret varav and lo machri'o is talking about the following scenario. Your father is engaged in the midst of a conversation. So what will a father be talking about right at around this time? See, he's probably listening to FAN and ESPN Sports. So right now they're going to talk about which free agents are they going to sign. Is Plaxico Burress, who just spent the last 3 years in jail, is he going to be signed by the Giants or the Steelers? And that was kind of a surprise because everybody thought the Eagles were the front runner. So now your father is there having a discussion with his friend where he thinks Plaxico Burress is going to be signed. And father says, I know he's going to the Steelers. You, little punky son or daughter, says, no, Pop, he's going to the Giants. That's lo yisorit varav. He's in the midst of a conversation, and he expresses an opinion, and you contradict it. Or, the fourth statement, v'lo machri'o, you tell him the following. And he's having this little discussion. One of his friends says he's going to the Steelers. Your father says he's going to the Giants. And you pop up and say, Pop, you're right! He's going to the Giants. How do I know? Because the owner of the Giants arranged a personal private jet flight. He was in Florida to fly him to New York to have a dinner with the Giants coach tonight, Tom Coughlin. Here the halacha says, don't do anything. Don't contradict him. And don't even agree with him. Why? He doesn't need you to confirm his opinion. If you come in and say, you're Pop, you're right, it's as if, you know, he needs the added support that you can offer. That's the violation of you. A parent should be held in such reverence, in such awe, that when they're in the context of discussion, you never contradict him when he or she expresses an opinion.
And number two, you don't even agree with them. You don't give them any added support.
Because your offering support generates the impression that the adult parent needs your confirmation, needs your support. You're adding, you're bringing something to the table that they had not thought of. And as a result, this is a chisat hakavod for pop or mom, and this violates the lo machri'o et vara. These are the four simple examples, illustrations of what yira'ah means. Not to stand, not to sit and occupy their place. Lo yistar, don't contradict, and do not affirm, don't confirm something which they had already said. That's it. Ezehu kibud, what constitutes kavod, asks the writer. Ma'achil, umashke, malbish, umichase, machnis, umotzi. You feed, you give to drink, you dress them, you cover them, you help them in and out of the cab, in and out of the house. Those are the illustrations. Now, those of you who have spent some time learning Gemara know that 90% of the time, Braitot and Mishnah never give principles. The way they communicate the principle is by giving concrete illustrations. Concrete illustrations that every Tom, Dick, Harry, and Sam will be able to relate to. And the challenge for us is to establish what is the concept, the principle that one can derive from the illustrations that have been identified. So if the Braita tells us that the definition of kibud is ma'achil, mashker, malbish, motzi, machnis, what now is the definition of the mitzvah of kibud avayim? What is the definition? Providing service. That's it. Providing service. That is the definition of kibud avayim. The Gemara has a lengthy discussion immediately thereafter. Who has to pay for those services? Father needs some shopping done in the house. Your mother needs some shopping. Who has to go to Pathmark? You have to go to Pathmark, there's no doubt about it. But who pays for it? Michel Av or Michel Ben? There is a discussion. But never once in the subsequent discussion of the Gemara does the Gemara deviate from its classic understanding that kibud avayim basically means that a child is obligated to furnish services for a parent. Nothing beyond that. So when you will now tell your child who expresses the wish to go to such and such a person's house for Shabbat, and you don't particularly like that young man or young woman because they're into terrible things. They text on Shabbos. They do lots of other things, worse than texting on Shabbos. And you don't want your son or daughter in that environment. And you will shoot the argument and say, kibud avayim, you have to listen to me? That's totally inappropriate. Because kibud avayim doesn't mean don't go to my friend's house, go to your friend's house. It means to provide service, nothing beyond that. What might be involved is the lav of lo yistoret vara, part of the definition of what might be yir'ah, but it's certainly not kibud. Kibud is, according to the simple interpretation, simply extracting, providing services for mother and father. That's what it means. Okay. Now, in the pasuk of Yir'ah, which we read in Parshat Kedoshim, there is a very famous Rashi, which is based on a Gemara in Yevamos, which we'll see in a second. Whenever the Torah lists mitzvot that seemingly have nothing to do with one another, in the same pasuk, you have to ask yourself the question, why does the Torah choose to code mitzvah A and mitzvah B in the same pasuk? That's your challenge, that's your responsibility.
in Sefer Dvarim, where we darshan smuchin, not only do we have to ask that question, if two mitzvot are in the same pasuk, but even if they're in different psukim, but pasuk bet precedes pasuk gimel. So you will have one mitzvah listed in pasuk bet and another one in gimel. They have nothing to do with each other. And in Sefer Dvarim, where we extract halachic significance simply by virtue of the fact that the two mitzvot are written within immediate proximity of one another, I'll give you the most famous illustration. In Parshat Ki Tetzé, the Torah writes, Lo tilbash sha'atnez, tsemer upishin yachdav. You are not permitted to wear sha'atnez. Next pasuk. Gidilim ta'aseh lecha al arba kanfot kisutcha. If you're wearing a four-cornered garment, you have to put tzitzis on the fringes. So the Gemara asks, why does the Torah quote the mitzvah of putting on tzitzis right after the prohibition against wearing shatnez? And the Gemara establishes a very important rule simply by virtue of the fact that the two are written right next to one another. Anybody remember the rule? Anybody know the rule? The rule is, let's assume, Rabotai, here is a given. The tzitzis themselves must be made out of wool. Must be made out of wool. The garment can be made out of anything. But what happens if it's made out of linen? I am wearing a four-cornered garment made out of linen. Should I put tzitzis on or not? Yeah. What? The answer is, I wouldn't know. But the Gemara darshins, asei doche lo ta'aseh. Whenever a positive commandment is in conflict with a negative commandment, the positive commandment overrides. So the positive commandment of furnishing tzitzit on a garment with made out of linen overrides. How do I know that principle that aseh docha lo ta'aseh? I learn it out from the fact that shatnez and tzitzit are written next to one another. In Shmot, Vayikra, and Bamidbar, not everybody agrees that we are doresh smuchim. Not everybody agrees that. In Sefer Dvarim, everybody agrees that we are doresh smuchim. Not time now to explain why. But in Sefer Dvarim, agreed, not everybody agrees in Vayikra. But in the same pasuk, everybody thinks you should ask that question. Two topics, coded in the exact same pasuk, you have to ask the question, why did HaKadosh Baruch Hu formulate the pasuk by mentioning Yirah and to observe the Shabbat? So I'm sure many of you remember the famous Rashi in Parshat Kedoshim, who's going to quote the Gemara in Yevamos, which will be the key to today's Shi'ur. What does Rashi say? What does Rashi say, Rabotai? Yeah? Exactly. Your parents tell you to be Mechal Shabbos. Parents tell you to be Mechal Shabbos. So, what should you do? So the Gemara will say, you cannot be Mechal Shabbos. Why? Ani Hashem Elokeich. Kulchem chayavim lichvodi. You're obligated to follow HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and your parents are obligated to follow HaKadosh Baruch Hu. They have no right to tell you to do anything that is prohibited according to Torah law. No right to tell you anything that is prohibited or mandated by Torah law. A parent cannot tell you, as we'll see the Gemara in a second. Let's read, check the Gemara in Yevamos. That's the next page. You see on the top of the page, it says, Yevamos daf vav amud aleph. The Sanya, we learned in the Braisa. Yachol amar lo aviv, hi tameh. Yachol, what does your father say? Hi tameh. Hi tameh. Let's take Mr. Berger. He's a kite, right? He's not a kite. Anybody here is husband? Anybody's husband's a kite? No kite. Okay. Husband is a kite. Tells his child, go into that cemetery. He tame. I want you to go into the cemetery. Or,
Al tachzir, o sha'amal al tachzir. Here is my wallet. I left it in the shul. Somebody finds my wallet. So there is a mitzvah, hashavat aveda, to return a lost article to its owner. If not, you make an announcement in shul, somebody lost a wallet, I found it, please come and identify it. Father says, do not return that wallet to Rabbi Adler. Do not return it.
How do I know that I should ignore Papa or Mom?
How do I know that I should ignore it? Yachol Yishama, lo, perhaps you should listen to him. See, the Gemara always talks about the father doing these wrong things. Mothers never would ask to do something like that. It's always the father. Yachol Yishama, lo, perhaps you should listen to him. Talmud Lomar, Ish Imo Ve'aviv Tira'u, etc., etc., etc. Ve'et Shaptotai Tishmor Ani Hashem Lopechem, Kulchem Chayavim Bechvodim. Father has to listen to the law that a Kohen is not Kamivim Tami Lameis. You, the Kohen, the son, have to follow the law not to be Mitami Lameis. Father has an obligation to be Machzir and Aveda. You, the son or daughter, have an obligation to be Machzir the Aveda. Here, you ignore parental request. Ignore parental request. Fine. This is a well-known case. I'm going to throw out three cases now, and we'll see how these poskim handle the case, and you, Rabotai, will now tell me how did they, I want you to keep this in mind, how did these poskim interpret the phrase lo yistor et dvarav? Lo yistor, do not contradict their words. I want you to, even though they are not talking about that, per se, but you will be able to extract from them an incredibly important conclusion, which you will prefer and cherish. Case number one, 1963. I know the family involved, a family in Borough Park. I grew up with them. 1963. Family was made, had an opportunity. This guy was in the early computer business. Very early. And he got a job that enabled him to make Aliyah. Job offer to make Aliyah.
His parents, who also lived in Borough Park, they davened at Shomrei Emunah in Borough Park, 52nd and 14th Avenue, said, I don't want you to go to Israel.
I want my children here and my, more importantly, my grandchildren here. They decided, the father said, I'm going to go to Rabbi Yishai and ask him. Okay? Rabotai, you are Rabbi Yishai. Tell me how you're going to begin to process and evaluate this question. What are the issues that you are going to put on the table to make a decision for Mr. and Mrs. so on and so forth, whether they can go to Israel or not? Yeah. Good. Number one is Aliyah Mitzvah. If it is a mitzvah, what would you say? Perfect. See, you go. If it's not a mitzvah, what happens? Then what do you say? You have to listen. Okay? That's one possibility. That's exactly the tack that Rav Moshe takes. Rav Moshe analyzes, number one, whether the mitzvah, whether living in Israel represents a mitzvah of the Torah or not. So Rav Moshe cites the very famous machlokes between the Rambam and the Ramban. The Rambam never said that it's not a mitzvah to live in Israel, but he did not code as one of the 613 mitzvot to live in Israel. The Rambam has a list, a Sefer HaMitzvot. And he lists the 248 positive commandments and the 365 negative commandments. Nowhere on that list exists the mitzvah to live in Eretz Yisrael. The Ramban, in his critique of the Rambam in Sefer HaMitzvot, it's the Ramban's first critique. Rabbeinu Moshe ben Maimon, why did you omit the mitzvah of Aliyah le'Eretz Yisrael? Why did you omit it? Of course there's a mitzvah to live in Israel. Of course there's a mitzvah. A mitzvah mid-de-oraita. So the Ramban in his count, amongst the number 248 counts, living in Israel. Of course the Ramban will have to take something else off the list. Because there is something floating around in the air pollution, namely an agreement that there are 613 mitzvahs. Doesn't say in the Torah that there are 613 mitzvot. The Gemara in Makot darshens it from a gematria. A gematria. The first pasuk that you teach your child is what? Torah tziva lanu Moshe. And what's the gematria of Torah? 611. 611 mitzvot Moshe Torah. And two, HaKadosh Baruch Hu told us directly, Anoichi and Lo'i Alecha, the first two commandments. So there are 613 mitzvot. So it's an acknowledged premise that everybody works with. The only debate is, and there are many different counts, there's the Bahakal, Alechot Kedolot, the Ramban, the Smag. There are many different counts as to how you arrive at that conclusion, what the number is. So the Ramban will have to subtract something else. Now, many, many try to come to the defense of the Rambam why he chose to omit counting this mitzvah, despite the fact that the Rambam speaks gloriously about the value and beauty of living in Eretz Yisrael. He quotes Ma'amar Chazal after Ma'amar Chazal, which is very unusual for the Rambam. The Rambam is not a Musa book. It's a halachic work. He rarely quotes Ma'amarei Chazal. He tells you, this is the halacha. You're not going to do this, you have to do this. When it comes to the mitzvah of living in Eretz Yisrael, although he didn't formulate it as one of the 613, he goes on and on. He's gushing. He quotes the Gemara in Ketubot, that anybody who dwells in Chutz La'aretz, kimi she'ein lo Eloha, it's as if you don't have a God. And he quotes 60,000 other Ma'amarei Chazal. So why didn't he count it as a mitzvah? So there are many, many explanations. Many explanations. Rav Kook, for example, suggested. Why didn't the Rambam count it? He drew an analogy to the Baal Halachot Gedolot. The Bahag, one of the earliest codes, even before the Rambam, did not count Anochi Hashem Elokeinu. Asher hotzeiticha me'eretz Mitzrayim mibeit avadim is one of the 613 commandments. Anochi Hashem, to believe in God. He did not count it as one of the 613. Tavos, why? Why not? Because the Bahag said, I don't have to count that. Because if you don't believe in that, there's nothing to... Why are you eating matzah on Pesach? Why are you doing anything? Why are you keeping kosher? Why are you not desecrating the Shabbat? So it's the axiom upon which everything else is built. I don't have to go ahead and legislate that there is a mitzvah to believe in the Ribono Shel Olam. Said Rav Kook, take a guess, Rabotai, how many mitzvot of the 613 are dependent upon Eretz Yisrael? How many of the mitzvot only are related somehow to Eretz Yisrael? How many would you think? How would you say? What?
Keep going.
Rav Kook counted 223 mitzvot that are related to Eretz Yisrael or the Beit HaMikdash. Something along those lines. He said, do I need a mitzvah to tell me you have to live in Eretz Yisrael? There are 223 mitzvot that only apply in Eretz Yisrael. Obviously, you have to live in Eretz Yisrael. That's why the Rambam didn't find it necessary to code that obligation. Okay, whatever the teretz is. Listen to what Rav Moshe says. I believe that since the Rambam did not code the obligation to live in Eretz Yisrael, obviously it's a very nice thing to do, but it's not a mitzvah. not a mitzvah.
And if it's not a mitzvah, as you said, parents have a right to tell you to live or not to live in Israel.
And therefore, this particular family was told by Rav Moshe, do not make Aliyah. Because your parents object to you making Aliyah. That was the rule. Now,
just 1 second. What would you conclude from Rav Moshe's statement about why is he now telling this family not to make Aliyah? Under what ubrik? Under what halacha is he now telling me that you have an obligation to listen to your parents? Under what halacha? Which one is it?
Lo yistorit varav. Rav Moshe takes the phrase lo yistorit varav pshuto kimashma. No chavos. None whatsoever. You're not allowed to contradict.
Unless it's the requirement to do a mitzvah. Since his preference is to ignore the Ramban and to adopt Ramban as the shita upon which he's basing his psak, therefore he ruled that this particular family is not to make Aliyah, and they did not make Aliyah. They did not make Aliyah. Yes.
Sure it is. Okay, but see, he's translating lo yistar means obedience. If your father or mother tell you to do something, you're not allowed to contradict them. It's not only in the discussion whether classical Boris is going to see as a giant. It means no contradicting parents. That's correct.
In fact, the Rav of the Shul, Shomrei Emunah in Barakah, who was, if you happen to remember, Rabbi Wahlberg, Zichrono Livracha, he was a great, great Darshan. He once said, how ironic it is. If you look at the Pasuk in Parshas Yitro, in the Aseret HaDibrot, what does HaKadosh Baruch Hu say, Kabeid et avicha ve'et imecha? What's the reward? L'man yarichon yomecha al ha'adama.
So he said, apparently, this particular family has... This guy probably fulfilled the mitzvah of Kibud Avim very nicely until this point. That's why he was blessed with a job opportunity and the opportunity to go to Israel. How ironic it is that he will not be going to Eretz Israel because of the mitzvah of Kibud Avim, because he's listening to his father and his mother. How ironic it is.
Fine. That was Rav Moshe. Case number two. The Maharik.
Your son or daughter is 22 years old. They meet a young lady, a young man. And they fall in love the old-fashioned way. They met, they went on a couple of dates, very nice. No shadchan, no nothing, you don't have a call yet. They met each other, they liked each other. And he or she brings their potential spouse to you, and you don't like them. I don't like your family. I don't like your values. I don't like her. I don't like him. I don't like him. And I prohibit you from marrying them.
Okay? This happened to the Maharik.
And this family said, let's ask the Maharik. So, again, I ask you, what do you think the Maharik is going to put on the table? Can you cite any pasuk, any mitzvah, which would now place it into a certain category? Can you quote a pasuk? Yes. Okay, Peruvu doesn't have to be with this young woman or this man. So that's not. You can listen to your father and mother and get married to some other church. Okay, but that doesn't have to be this Dabak Ishto. It can be the Ishto that I agree to. Oh, so but I'm looking to say what might be What's the issue that he has to grapple with? Yes?
Isn't there, I don't remember who said that, isn't there a law that says a parent can't make a kid marry, they can't make their kid marry, they're forced to marry?
He can't marry, he's not forcing you to marry someone, he's just saying, don't marry this one. Find somebody else who I like. Okay, so what? This is what I'm looking for. So the Gemara in Kedushin says, listen to the Gemara, Asur le'adam le'kadesh isha ad shivir ena. Asur le'kadesh isha ad shivir ena. What do you think that means?
Yeah.
You're not allowed to betroth the young woman until you see her. Now, in the Hasidic world, they took this literally. They took it literally. The parents arranged the shidduch, and then 2 minutes before the vart, they bring him into the room, take a look at him. Ooh, you like it? Good, very nice. Good, very nice. We know very well that it doesn't mean to take a look at her. It means to get to know her, so that you'll feel some common attraction to her, that there should be a bond, some chemistry taking place. Asur le'adam le'kadesh isha ad she'yireh. Therefore, posits the Marib, apparently the halacha grants a son or a daughter the right to get engaged to somebody who they feel attracted to. Otherwise, there would be no such halacha. That's the purpose of the halacha. That there has to be a magnetic pull, to establish a relationship. And until that point, kiddushin should not take place. Therefore, said the Marik, based on this Gemara, I believe that the son or daughter has a right to choose who they would like to get married. And by you telling them, I don't want you to get married, despite the fact that they feel this common attraction to one another, is against halacha. And because it's against halacha, therefore I side in favor of the child. But the conclusion, take 1 second, the conclusion will be, if not for this particular halacha, let's assume there was no such statement. Asur le'adam le'kadesh isha achirena. There was no such thing. What conclusion would the Marik have reached? What conclusion would the Marik have reached? You cannot marry that young man or young woman. Why? Your father and mother object. Why? Because lo yisorit varav. You're not permitted to contradict your mother or father. And if they object, go find somebody else. Go find somebody. Go to the top of the sixes again and find somebody else. Go to Central Park and go on to ice skating rink, wherever it is, wherever people go, whatever they meet, and find somebody else. That's all. So said the Marik. Yeah.
Well, I was just going to say, just because the parents are not telling you to marry somebody you're not attracted to.
Correct.
Right.
I know, for right now, this is what I want. This is my, I am attracted to this woman. And you know very well, once in that engagement stage, you get, there's nobody else worth it. Nobody else. Nobody else. And he felt that's the only reason. Other than that consideration, my father and mother tell you to do something, you obey. Obedience. Yeah.
So from what I'm thinking is that you gave two examples of how you can X out this loving tie.
Correct.
But in most cases, when a parent says something,
you cannot.
But that means that in most cases, when a parent says something, doesn't have anything to do with service, goods and services.
Hold on. That's what the Rambam's going to say. Hold on a second. Yes. Like I said, Lego Savani Keshela, and we'll take it out in a couple of seconds. Yeah.
Yes.
So, can't
you argue the case that, and what's your motion to that they could have said, I want the opportunity to
Rabbi Shimon say those are mitzvot which are situational. If you're in Israel, you're obligated. You don't have to live in Israel. That's his response. Apparently not.
Case number three. Same discussion. Trumas Hadesha. Yeah.
Tremble. It means you're not allowed to walk in with your shoes, you're not allowed to walk in with your money bag hanging out, you know, people the money bag. That's you're not allowed to walk in with a cane, you know, not a cane that you need for walking, but one of those honorary canes. You ever see the Bubba the Rebbe we used to walk? Used to see him every day, come to shul. Silver cane. He walked at a brisk pace, but he had a silver cane that was considered a sign of royalty.
You can't bring that on the Beit HaMikdash. So you are is always defined as it's a positive experience, but it's manifest through don't do A, don't do B, don't be C. It's a good point. Case number three. You want your little tashit to go to wine. Okay? Your little boy wants to go to Ner Yisrael or Lakewood. That's what he wants. Or vice versa. You want your son to go to Nehru's to Nehru's son. You want your son to go to Lakewood. He wants to go to YU. Okay? Again, what issue do you think will be brought to the Truma Dineshan's table? In both cases, he'll perform the mitzvah of Talmud Torah. Right? No one's going to say that you can't learn in Lakewood. Of course. No one's going to say he can't learn in Yisrael. Nobody's going to say he can't learn in YU. So what will you now bring to the table in order to help guide you in this decision? Is there a halacha that would acknowledge that somebody has a right to choose where in the world they want to study type? What would you say?
But that's
an Israel issue. That's an Israel issue. Hey, look, so I didn't mention Eretz Yisrael. Talk about Lakewood versus YU. Mashalibo Chafetz. Correct. The halacha is that students will only succeed if they want to, if they enjoy and want to learn. They want to learn. Coerced learning is not terribly successful. Says the Truma Sadesha, learning is not only determined topics. The way it's loose, the way it's narrowly translated is you only supposed to, if the kid wants to learn Bava Kama, don't teach him Zvacha. If the kid wants to learn Mishnah, don't force Tanakh on. That's the way it's narrowly translated. Says the Truma Sadesha has to be broader. If this child feels I can only succeed with that Rebbe or this Rebbe, that's his prerogative to enable him to fulfill the mitzvah of Talmud Torah. Therefore, in effect, Pop and Mom are asking the child to transgress Torah law by going to the other institution. Because he's not going to be able to fulfill the mitzvah of Talmud Torah appropriately. Why not? Because he's not going to be turned on by those rabbis, for whatever reason it is. So therefore he ruled in favor of the child. But once again, the conclusion is obvious. If not for this particular halacha, if there was no such statement, that students will succeed only if they learn that which they would like, if there was no such statement, who would the Truma Sadeshin have ruled in favor of? The parent. Listen, kiddo, you can learn just as well there. Why do you have to disregard your parents' wish? But because of that consideration, the Truma Sadeshen ruled in accordance with the child. But the conclusion is obvious. If not for that consideration, undoubtedly obedience is a factor. Yes?
It seems like from the last two examples, there aren't explicit votes.
Correct.
To defend the child.
Correct.
There are more general principles. So it's interesting that even though you have this mitzvah of Europe, that
they're expanding the field of what has. Correct. They're expanding the field greatly. It's not only when your parents expect you to violate or demand a mitzvah black and white and total. Any halachic consideration whatsoever will justify ignoring
it. It's not, it doesn't even seem like halachic almost. It's almost like any sort of good kind of principle. Do you know what I'm saying?
But it's somehow an extension, part of the definition of how the mitzvah is performed. How do you perform the mitzvah of getting married? Only if you really are attracted to her. How do you perform the mitzvah of Tapa Torah? Only if you really want, you know, enjoy that wedding. Yeah.
It also sounds like there isn't any limit placed on the parents as to until what age are you entitled to voice an opinion.
Correct. No doubt, this family, the first case from Rabbi Shaddai, will marry the children. Kibud Av V'Em and Yirah have no limitations. That is correct. That's correct. In fact, in Shulchan Aruch it's quoted that the mitzvah of Kibud Av V'Em applies even after parents pass away. There's also a mitzvah of Kibud Av V'Em. Many believe that the laws of Avelus, of Yud Bet Chodesh, of the 12, not Shiva and Shloshim, but the extension for parents is only Kibud Av V'Em, and a parent has a right to be mochel that. Where a parent told the child, you know what? When I go, you don't have to observe Yud Bet Chodesh. You don't have to. I don't want you to be, you know, inconvenienced or socially deprived. You don't have. And there are many halachas which are based on that. You're not allowed to curse your father and mother even after they passed away. It's part of the mitzvah of Kibud Av V'Em. Yeah.
It doesn't look like if the Gemara to begin with was the interpretation, the original interpretation of Kibud Av V'Em, which was also the Gemara, you know, it kind of like created for itself a way to trump the Deraita, a mix of Deraita. I mean, it says Kibud Av V'Em, what's Kibud Av V'Em? Let's say, if you don't look at the Gemara first, I mean, right, you need the Gemara to interpret the mitzvot. But then, it's ironic that the interpretation of the Gemara to begin with created a lot of leeway to, you know, to trump the mitzvah in a way. Because all these examples that you cited are convincing, but they're also created by the Gemara.
Of course.
But the original interpretation of the mitzvah started in the Gemara also.
Correct. We're all every discussion that we have is predicated on Torah Sheba Al Peh, of how the Torah Sheba Al Peh defines the Gemara. Defines the Torah. You can't budge without it. You can't budge. Yeah.
Maybe I have an answer. Maybe I don't know. You know, if your parents tell you don't like to see when traffic is coming, it's for the good of the child. Right? So if your parent has the good of the child in mind.
Parent always thinks they have. I'm not.
Sometimes it's about the parent and what they want. They want the kid to be a certain way, but in fact, the mind is really the good of the kid.
Okay, but.
That's
okay, but here, all three posts all believe the interest, what's in the best interest of the child, is only a factor because they are supported by some degree of a mitzvah. Otherwise, you defer to the parent, even though it may not be in their best interest. Who cares? It may not be in their best interest.
Grandchildren
on a derabbanan level. I don't want to focus on that. Midoraita, it's only midorabbanan that a grandchild has a degree of Kibud Av V'Em to a grandparent. But now let's see. Yeah.
There's one more question. The child has the obligation of kibud, which is an obligation of machpel.
Right.
So, and they're in the situation where they're at home or they're nearby. If they leave to go to Israel, if they leave to go to.
They can't be machpelus?
Right. So, how come that's not a factor?
Because it doesn't say that you necessarily have to live next door to your mother and father the rest of your life.
you can make sure that their needs are provided for by having a sibling take care of it, or I'll hire somebody. Anytime they need food, I'll pay the bill. Just no problem. I'm not going to abandon them. And in the case of the Rabbi Shir, the question, parents were perfect, the parents of these people, but they got healthy, able, they were still working. But in the worst case, I'll provide for them. Doesn't mean it's oriented to make sure that their needs are taken care of. I'll make sure that their needs are taken care of. I want to show you the counterpoint, which is based on the Ramban, cited by the Rashba and all of those who followed in the school of the Ramban. Take the next page, Rabotai, where it says Chidushei HaRamban. Now, the case which the Ramban will illustrate his point is the case where the father tells the child to go into a cemetery. The father tells the kid, a Kohen, I want you to go into the cemetery and violate the law of Lenefesh lo yitama be'amav. Okay? Bear that in mind as we read the Ramban. Says the Ramban, Ein ikar kavod elamasha amru b'kiddushin eizehu kavod ma'achilo mashkehu malbisho man'ilo. What is kavod defined? You feed him, you give him to drink, you help him get dressed, put on his shoes. V'chol davar shiyesh lo hana'abo. This is what they say. Anything for which there is a tangential benefit for the parent. Now listen carefully. Avol amar lo. La'asot davar she'ein lo hana'ashon klum. But if the father tells the child to do something for which there's zero benefit on behalf of the parent, zero benefit on behalf of the parent, ein ze kavod she'amra Torah. This is not at all included in the category of kavod. V'chein ma she'amru yachol amar lo aviv lehitameh. If father told his son to do what? To be metame lemeis. So how did the Gemara resolve that the child should not go into the cemetery? How did the Gemara resolve that the child should not go into the cemetery? Based on what? Because it says, Ishimo v'aviv tiro, ve'et shabtotai tishmoru, ani Hashem elokecha. That whenever a parent asks you to do something against Torah law, you are to ignore your parent and listen to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Says the Ramban, you know what the case is talking about? Where the father's wallet was in the cemetery. The father's wallet was in the cemetery. He doesn't say wallet, he has his fruit. There was some fruit in the cemetery, which the father wanted. There's a bag of cherries in the cemetery. And the father wants cherries. Right now. Please, my little son, please go into the cemetery and get me those cherries. Go get me my wallet. There, says the Ramban, there is now a legitimate conflict. We'll read it inside in a second. Between the mitzvah incumbent upon the child and the prohibition against entering the cemetery. There is a legitimate conflict. Should the child go into the cemetery because he will provide a service for his father? Should the child not go into the cemetery because he will violate the law of being a time of events? There is a legitimate dilemma. And who is the only one who can resolve that dilemma? The Gemara. The Gemara says, under those circumstances, what should the child do? What should the child do under those circumstances? Should he go into the cemetery? Should he not go into the cemetery? Not go into the cemetery. There, says the Ramban, there was a legitimate dilemma. Let's read it inside. V'chein masha amru yachol amalo aviv lehitameh lahavi peirot ka'amar.
Why did he tell him to go to the cemetery? Because there were some cherries in the cemetery which he wanted. His wallet was in the cemetery which he needed. Aval hitamei lechinam. But if the father just out of shikaroo said, kid, I want you to go to the cemetery. Ein sarich lomar shelo yishamalo. I don't need a pasuk to tell me. I don't need a pasuk of ani Hashem Elokeichem kulchem chayavim lichvodi to tell me that the kid doesn't have to listen. You know why the kid doesn't have to listen? Why doesn't the kid have to listen? Why doesn't he have to listen? Without the Gemara's resolution, why doesn't he have to listen? Because the parent had no right to make a request. Why did the parent have no right to make a request? Because there is no benefit for the parent. None whatsoever.
Says the Rambam,
when do I need a pasuk in the Torah? When do I need a Gemara to resolve a dilemma between a child and HaKadosh Baruch Hu? Only if there is a legitimate dilemma. When is there a legitimate dilemma? When father asks a child to do something for which there is a benefit for him. That halacha demands child to be obedient. Listen to your father. Provide that benefit. But in the absence of a benefit, I don't need a pasuk. I don't need a gemara to tell me, hey kid, don't listen to your father. You know why you don't have to listen to your father or your mother? Because they had no right to make that request. The mere fact that they asked you to do it in no way is binding upon you. So if it's no way binding upon you, what is the only thing that you have to worry about at this particular time? You're not allowed to do a cemetery. There's no conflict. Why? Because parental demands are only when it is a benefit for them. Only a benefit for them. And the Rav elaborated upon this and said, take a second, 1 second. If you were to adopt Ramosha's position, Ramosha, and it's quite a number of them, I can now fashion for you 30,000 cases which will make the relationship between the child and his parents unbearable. Unbearable. You live in Teaneck.
I live in Flatbush. I live in Flatbush with the three blocks. Now I live in Teaneck. Okay, you have to move to Teaneck. You have to move to Flatbush. Why? Because your parents said so. Your son or daughter wants to go to a law school. I want you to go to medical school. I don't want lawyers. Lawyers are all liars and thieves and cheats. I want you to be something honorable, honorable. I want you to be a doctor. Okay, now you have to apply to medical school. You can take this to the nth degree. To the nth degree. And claim that based on lo yisorit vara is to be treated, you know, seriously, literally, not to contradict. It could establish a situation where there is zero freedom and latitude on behalf of a child to exercise any decision in any direction, in any avenue of life whatsoever. And every single time, you will now be guided by the same principle. You don't have any independent right to make any decisions where you live. You have no independent decisions to decide what you wear. You have no independent decisions what type of employment you seek. None whatsoever. Why? Lo yistorot varav. But if you adopt the Ramban's position, said, now listen carefully. How would the Ramban then say lo yistorot varav? How does he interpret those words? Lo yistorot varav. It means you don't engage them in debate. Your father tells you, your mother says, I want you to look flattish. Okay. Then you go buy your house and tea. You don't argue with them face to face.
That's the measure of respect. You don't argue with them face to face. Correct, but they had no right to make the demand. None whatsoever. No right to make that demand. I'll take one more second. And the Rav always said, just look at your children through your own eyes. How would you have reacted if your parents told you, you're not allowed to live where you're living, you're not allowed to be friends with this person, you're not allowed to go to this movie? How would you have liked it? You're 18 years old, and you want to go see this R-rated movie. You're 19 years old. And your mother and father said, no, I don't want you to see that. No R-rated movies for you. No R-rated movies. Schindler's List was also R-rated. It's also rated R. I don't want you to see Schindler's List. I don't want you to see it. Look at it through that prism. Just as you yourself would have liked to have the option to make a decision, when I come of certain age, whether or not this movie is appropriate for you or not, your child has to be granted that decision-making process as well. The task of a parent is to provide guidance, to provide objectives, to provide standards. And the choice whether they want to live up to those standards or not is up to the child. Yeah.
So that's my next point. According to the Rav, if the choice is between going to Notre Dame and YU, he wants to go to Notre Dame? By all means. By all means. The reason why he should go to YU and not the University of Maryland is not because of Kibbutz Ha'aleh. Why should he go to YU? Because he'll have an opportunity to learn Torah. That's the only reason. But in terms of dictating whether you should go to University of Maryland, pure choice, the Rav believe is the child's choice. The child's choice. And if you ask, if the kid himself asked the Rav will have told him, I don't make decisions for your life. One of my closest friends in Chavrusa asked the Rav when we graduated college, whether you should go to the Kollel in YU or to law school. He said, what are you asking me for? It's your mind. Make a decision for yourself. I don't tell people what to do. It's your decision. You want to study Torah? Be my guest. Of course I'd like you to study. You want to go to law school? Be my guest. It's your prerogative. And the same thing should be, his point of view was, from the perspective of a parent vis-a-vis a child. Hopefully you will have established the type of aura and environment in your life that Torah learning is such an essential ingredient in your life that he or she will want to go to Stern or to YU. That's all. But they're not that they're going because you told them to do so.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay, that's an interesting, okay. I could hear that, yes, to some extent. Father, son will say, you don't have to pay for me. I'll pay for it by my own money.
Okay, but the other thing is,
don't take more pressure. That's why, according to the Rav, all of those questions posed to Rav Moshe and to the Marid are no brainers. Don't ask me. You want to make Aliyah? Make Aliyah. You know, you want to marry this person? Go right ahead. It's your life. You want to go study in Lakewood? That's your prerogative. Don't ask me these questions. He would have said it's not necessary to open up a Shulchan Aruch to sit down and write the question. The answer to your question would have been in two lines. The choice is yours, my dear. That's it. Yeah. Yes.
Okay, so
he would have told the parents that you have no right to make that request. And that is the most important thing that can come out of today. That parents have to understand that the most important ingredient, the most important thing with our children is that we maintain a relationship. The most important thing. To maintain a relationship. That they should feel comfortable that when they have an issue, that they know that the address to which they can turn to for guidance, for support, for advice, is mom and pop. If you're going to continuously create friction by telling them, by trying to limit and or hinder their independence, that only creates friction. And I tell parents this, and I've had this too many times, even when a child is going quote unquote off the derech. What's the most important thing? Should the child be told by the parent, get out of bed, go to daven right now, I want you to play Shabbos, I want you to go to shul? Or is the most important thing to maintain a relationship? Because you know if you're going to hound that kid over and over again to go to shul, that relationship is going to deteriorate rather rapidly. Rather rapidly. And it is more important to maintain that relationship than to force feed and shove a mitzvah down his or her throat. That's the most important thing. The most important. So according to the Rav, this was, it's light years apart in the opposite pole from the way Rav Moshe, and the Rav's in the minority. In the minority in terms of halacha l'maisa. There is a commentary on Masechus Kedushin who defines kibud in the following way. Parents like to hear this. Ritzonam Zehu kibudam. Ritzonam zehu. Whatever they want, that's their honor. Ritzonam zehu kibudam. The Makne said that. The Makne. It's a commentary on the Makne. Men Kuf Nun Hei wrote a very famous commentary on the Sefer Kedushin. He writes, Ritzonam zehu kibudam. That's it, whatever they want. Very nice. Very nice. Yeah.
Okay, that's a good halakha question. It's a halakha question. In today's day and age, where we know things, you would not allow to give a father a cigarette or mother a cigarette. Absolutely. I'm killing it. 100%.
Yes.
So here,
this is your job as a parent to bring
them up. I understand.
The issue
will be the most poignant issue and the most relevant one will obviously be high school age children.
Yes,
when they're older than that, you throw in the towel. I know I have nothing to do. Right?
I have nothing to say anymore.
When it's okay here. It is an important time. It is an important time. But if you ask me my opinion is that this applies to high school students today.
So what about your
lecture
with the
that that what? Okay, I understand. That I presented a certain perspective. Where certain studies have taken place that coercive tactics for davening at least are valuable. Very valuable.
according to their studies, that people later on in life will be more inclined to maintain services, to come to daven, if they were forced as a child. The thinking being, because when they become an adult, they realize what values are, and they say, oh, this must have been an important value because my parents were shoving it down my throat. And now they have enough sense to incorporate it and to practice it. If they were never in shul in the first place, if they never went to shul, why would they suddenly even entertain the thought as a child? That would be it. But many people ask me that after the shul. My own personal preference is, I happen to disagree with it. I disagree with what I said. That I presented a point of view. My personal opinion is that it's not the way to go. Yes. I'm not saying you shouldn't tell your child or say, no, it's time to go to God.
I will tell my child who's 14, he can't stay in this movie. Absolutely no question.
Oh, okay.
Because there are things, you know, you have to tell the kids, and there are things that you can say at 13 or 14, you don't want to do
it or not. I understand. But when they're 16, what are you going to say? I can't tell you what the age is, but in theory, I would...
If my 16-year-old is going to leave home because I told him...
No, I don't even think to leave home. I don't think it has to be that drastic. If you're asking me with a 16-year-old, I think that it's your responsibility, a parent's responsibility is to state why you think it's inappropriate, but not to tell him you're not allowed to do this.
So,
not allowed to do this. I don't think, because I am, this position of the rub made an enormous impact upon me. Enormous. I don't know how many of you remember one of my boys, Z. He used to wear a blue cobalt jacket. But same thing with Davening. There were many times on a Sunday when the Mincha Maariv was at 4:10 and the Giant game started, one place just on the little overboard, and it's the last 2 minutes, the game's tied, Giants are moving down, and I would say, with difficulty, we're going to shul now. I'm going to shul. Want to come? You want to come? Fine. I never asked them afterwards, did you daven or not? I said, if you don't want to daven or not, I never followed up to create a situation where I didn't trust them. To act properly.
I guess I have a different feeling about things that are dangerous, I think, for a kid that you can never undo.
I understand. I hear your concern as a parent. You're asking me in the philosophical world, I think that the child has to make that decision. As a parent, you have a responsibility to exercise, you know, the type of control which you feel is appropriate. You have a lot of people to support you. A lot of people. On halakhic grounds. Yes.
I actually appreciate the idea of not shoving down the throat's principle. Then they'll go to resent it, and you want to get appreciation, you want to want it. But so when it comes to innocuous things, like, okay, so they didn't dive in or whatever it is, okay. So when it comes to things that are going to affect them, like going to this friend, really bad influence, expecting Shabbos, or doing, I mean, I think texting Shabbos is bad as it is, I'm kind of, you know, but I'm saying, I mean, don't they, I feel like kids, at whatever age they are, they always want to push the limits, test the waters and see how much they can get away with. And I feel like they need the parent to come in and say, well, I don't think it's a good idea. I mean, I'm not saying you should shove them, you should yell at them.
You have an obligation to say, I don't think it's a good idea. But now the kid says, I want to go anyway.
I'm not going to
go. Okay, so then you're not just saying, I don't think it's a good idea. You're saying, listen, buddy, you're not leaving the house. You're not leaving the house.
It's so bad for them to know that there are acceptable behaviors, acceptable things, and the not acceptable things that are not going to be accepted in this house, and they have to respect it. And I don't think it should start when they're teenagers. I think it starts when they're toddlers. There are rules in the house that you accept. And I'm not against communication, but I'm saying, like, isn't my obligation to set the limits?
Okay. can't. It depends what perspective you're looking at. If a child says, I'm not particularly interested in your limits. I don't like your lifestyle. I'm not interested in your lifestyle. I've been exposed to it for 14, 15 years. I'm not interested in your lifestyle. It means zero to me. That's what the kid is telling, okay? Without saying it in those words, it means zero to me. Your whole lifestyle is an anathema to me. I'm just not interested. So you're going to force the issue every time. Don't do this, don't do that, don't go to him, don't go to him, don't do this, dress this way, do that, sit down at the table. I don't know what the issue is. But you can see the conflict that's, you know, that's coming up. That's, yeah.
I don't know if the parallels between school situation and school sitting, but it is like guidance, role model, axia as parenting, and in terms of the demands that you make.
There are certain parallels, but there are other things which are not parallels. There are, in a school setting, you have to have certain rules and regulations, and if the kid's not interested in applying,
he doesn't have a choice.
Doesn't have a choice. He does not have a choice.
That's correct. Doesn't have a choice. Yeah. Yeah. Okay, I want to thank everybody. That's good.